This is Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by the American Family Insurance Championship in Madison. Wisconsin's stop on the PGA Tour Champions is back, and on the 2021 schedule, the tournament will be played June 11th through 13th at University Ridge Golf Course with a star-studded field featuring tournament host Steve Stricker and defending champion Jerry Kelly. This great event has raised more than $10.2 million for local charities since its debut in 2016. A limited number of tickets will go on sale starting May 11th on the tournament's website at amfamchampionship.com. A happy Friday to everybody. I welcome in my colleague, Gary D'Amato. I'm Rob Hernandez. We welcome in the AmFam Championship as a sponsor of Talking.Golf here through the tournament in June. And Gary D'Amato, I know it's one of many reasons to look forward to the 2021 schedule. The AmFam Championship is back.
Love it, Rob. Just love the fact that we're going to be able to see some live golf and cover some golf and spend some time at tournaments doing what we love to do. So I'm looking forward to it. Jerry, two-year defending champion. Now he's held that title belt for a couple of years now because, of course, there wasn't a tournament last year. And both Jerry and Steve are playing well this week in the region's tradition. So they've got their other major coming up in Madison.
That's for sure. That's for sure. And that brings us to What's Up. What's Up on Talking.Golf, powered by our Instagram account at wis.golf. And you can go to Instagram and check out all the great things that our marketing specialist, Megan Augustine, is doing to promote the things going on with Wisconsin Golf, our website. And as we get out and start covering tournaments here, Gary, we'll be feeding her videos and pictures and things to put up on Instagram. It's where the kids hang out, Gary. You and I, we're Twitter guys. But the kids, they're all about the Instagram.
Yeah. As my grandkids remind me all the time, that Twitter is for old folks. I've got to get better at Instagram, Rob, and I've got to get better at all the video stuff and all the stuff you do and do so well. Man, I'm a dinosaur. I've got to with it here.
Oh, no. You're aging gracefully, Gary D'Amato, aging gracefully. We'll get you caught up. But Gary mentioned the two locals having a great time at the Regents Tradition down in Birmingham, Alabama. Jerry Kelly, who had a piece of the lead, sole possession lead for a while, and then a share of the lead with Darren Clark, is now bogey number nine, and it's all par since. He's at 2 under for the day, 7 under for the tournament, and in the same place he was when he started the day, in second place, currently one shot behind Stephen Ames, and two more shots back, Steve Stricker. He is currently at 5 under par through 13 holes. It's been all pars for Steve as well. And then after a bogey at number eight. So they simultaneously went backwards on the leaderboard, and now they're kind of treading water here as they have two par fives coming up in the final four holes. But Gary, it's a fun major on this tour because it's four rounds. That's something you don't often see with the regular events out there. And it kind of gives these guys a feel that it's a big deal.
Yeah, I love that the Champions Tour majors are four rounds, Rob. And I think that plays into the hands of Jerry and Steve, because I think they're both in great shape. And Steve is still playing a lot on the PGA Tour, so he's used to 72 holes. Jerry, not so much. He's played a couple times. I think he's teed it up once or twice, I know, in Hawaii earlier this year. But Steve's used to 72 holes. So, and I think that's a factor as guys in their 50s and, you know, outside of Bernhard Langer, the ageless one, you know, guys get tired after 54 holes going into the final round on Sunday.
And when Jerry got in contention here after round one, a reminder that he owns the only major one in the last year and a half, the Bridgestone Senior Players. Steve Stricker, the defending champion of this event and the U.S. Senior Open. If it weren't for the fact there's five majors, Gary, we'd be working on some sort of Wisconsin Senior Slam.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, Jerry's going for his second senior major in a row. Yeah, and then Steve's going for his third in the last, four or five he's played in. So, Yeah, it's fun to see those Wisconsin guys. You know, we, Rob, you and I covered them for years on the PGA Tour, and they have not taken their foot off the gas, Rob. They both had really, really fine Champions Tour careers, and you know, a lot of tournaments to go.
Absolutely. And as we come on the air today, as part of our What's Up segment, if you haven't already, get over to wisconsin.golf. A story from Dennis McCann today, the historic Alpine Resort in Door County apparently has a new owner. It closed last season due to COVID-19, and they did not open at the start of this season. And they have decided to sell the property and the resort and the golf course. And it'll be apparently with the idea of grooming the golf course to begin play by Memorial Day, which is typically when tourist season starts up in Door County. I've never played Alpine Resort. I know a lot of people who have. The views there are stunning of the bay. Gary, it's good news for golf in Door County.
It really is. I played Alpine years and years ago, Rob, and it is fun. It's a fun track. You know, yeah, you're right. The views from up there of Green Bay are tremendous. And I remember there was a little electric trolley that took you up to the upper part of the golf course. I think you paid a quarter and put your bag on this little trolley and it carried you up there. It was a fun place to play. It sounds like minimal maintenance had been done on the golf course. So I'm sure it's going to take a few weeks to sort of whip it into shape. But I'm going to try to get up there, Rob, and play Peninsula and Alpine this year at some point.
And I tell you, it's a good opportunity because there's some good golf up there. Peninsula State Park opened just last weekend. And so the season just rounded into form there. And golf in Door County, always a treat, along with a stop at Wilson's for ice cream afterwards. So yeah. Make sure you give Door County a look if you're planning your golf getaways this year. One more thing on the What's Up department in terms of breaking news. I had an opportunity to talk this morning to Sarah Busey, the former Wisconsin women's state amateur champ, former state high school champ out of Racine St. Catharines. She is wrapping up a four-year college career at Santa Clara University out here in California. She told me today she's going to use her extra eligibility and take a grad transfer. She will go to Old Dominion University in the fall, and she mentioned she'll be the only American on the roster. They came within a shot or two at Old Dominion of getting to the NCAA regionals. So Sarah, very excited to be able to continue her career. And Gary, this is something we're seeing a lot of in the college ranks in all sports, but especially in golf, where we're seeing a lot of the juniors and seniors who have eligibility left, who are taking extra eligibility and want to keep playing while they pursue graduate program studies, going elsewhere to play. It's a fascinating time in the world of college sports.
It is. That transfer portal is getting a workout, I know. Good for Sarah. Do you happen to know, have you looked at the roster, Rob? Do you know where the other players come from? I'm just curious. I have, you just told me about this a little while ago. I didn't have time to call up the Old Dominion roster, but Sarah being the only American, that's interesting. Did she give you the reason that she decided on Old Dominion, Rob?
She said that she clicked with the coach right away. Her options that she was, the two options she was considering were Old Dominion and Indiana University. And once she took a visit to Old Dominion, she felt really good about the way things were going there. They have an outgoing senior from Vermont, so that must be the spot she's taking. And then we're looking at France, Czech Republic, Argentina, Japan, another from France, and Belgium.
Oh, my
Mallory
goodness.
Mallory Hetzel is the head coach, Rachel Walker, the assistant coach. And again, as a high school coach out here, as someone who advises families about, you know, when they ask my opinion on this program or that program, Sarah's coach at Santa Clara was really adamant about the fact that this misnomer about there being a lot of college scholarships available is no longer really the case at the Division I level. And it's even more so here in the era of extra eligibility. And so what we've got though is, you know, a lot of international students who want to come over here and not only play golf, but get an education. And now with the extra eligibility, you mentioned the transfer portal, there are a lot of coaches at the Division I level that are recruiting Divisions II and III as kind of a feeder system. And anybody can throw their name in the portal And we've seen even in the WEAC tournament last weekend, Lexi Mead going from Drake, a Division I program, to UW-Eau Claire. We saw one young woman from UW-River Falls go to lacrosse, make an instant impact behind a gal who came from Arkansas Monticello and a Division II program. So it's, I don't want to say it's the wild, wild west. I mean, Gary, we've both had kids that have gone through college. And I mean, at the end of the day, it's what's best for the kid, but it does make it kind of an era of uncertainty in the world of college sports, and very difficult for coaches to coach in that environment.
It really is. Just think of some of the many college golfers who are using that COVID year. There are undoubtedly a lot of players that coaches are loving to have back and can't wait to have them back for another year. But, you know, there's probably a few players that are going to use that extra year where the coach is like, well, I've got this hotshot freshman coming in, or, you know, and time to move on, you know? So it's an interesting problem, but yeah, it's good. It's really good that those college players have that extra year. That would have been a shame if that hadn't happened.
The coaches have that little prop, Gary, that shows the some of these kids where the door is, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, college golf also making headlines on our website this week, Gary, with the big story, really big story, based on the reaction that we've gotten from readers, both in terms of number of people reading the story and the people reaching us out to us on social media through messaging and the like. But Michael Burson, out after 10 years as the men's golf coach at the University of Wisconsin, he tells Gary that in the COVID-19 pandemic, he understood and realized that the days upon days, weeks upon weeks that he spends on the road with a college golf program kept him away from his family, and he is stepping away. And Gary, I guess you talked to Michael. What did you get from the conversation with him about his experience at Wisconsin and where the program is right now?
Yeah, those are good questions, Rob. I think he had a tremendous, he's still there. He's in the office for the rest of the month, but he is stepping down. He loves the university. He loves the program, loves working with the kids. I mean, he said, usually when you walk away from a job, you're unhappy. You're for whatever reason. He said, I'm not unhappy at all. He said, I just realized during COVID, when I was spending a lot of time at home with my wife and my 10-year-old daughter, that I'd been missing a lot of things. And he said, I really don't want to miss any more. I want to be a good dad. And I want to be there for my daughter and my wife. So he is stepping away for 100% family reasons, as he said. I think he leaves the program, Rob, in a pretty good place. They're going to be good next year. I mean, they lose Sam Anderson, and they lose Tom Kelby and Nick Robinson. They lose a couple of really good players, but they're pretty deep, and they have a couple of really good freshmen coming in, including Jacob Beckman from Middleton. So, you know, I think they're going to be in pretty good shape next year. That's a good job, and I know a lot of people are going to be interested in that job, Rob.
Yeah, and which kind of brings us to our talking point here on Talking.Golf today. For you and me, Gary, I don't want to speak for you, but for me, I think it's important that Marquette, UW-Madison, and UW-Green Bay all have strong golf programs. Good college golf programs make all the other golf in the state strong. We've seen that with the women's golf programs. Green Bay having a historic year, and of course the great program at the University of Wisconsin, and those kids have been competing in state events for a long, long time at the urging of Todd Erline, and their presence in state AMs and state opens only make those fields better, and it gives the gals from out of state an opportunity to mix and mingle with other golfers they didn't grow up playing against here in Wisconsin. I think the same holds true for the Badgers and Marquette and Green Bay. And I just feel that this is going to be a critical position to fill the right way. And one of the things that you and I think have both heard over the last 10 years is a certain level of, I'll call it uneasiness, between the current, the existing coaching staff and the alumni. And you had two different eras with two great periods of success, one under Dennis Tiziani and one under Jim Schumann, where they won Big Ten titles under Tiziani with all Wisconsin golfers, and they almost made the NCAA championship under Jim Schumann with a lineup of all Wisconsin golfers. And I think that's the direction that the alumni want to see this go. What's your take, Gary, on what is important in the hire for the new coach at the University of Wisconsin?
Yeah, I think obviously recruiting is so important. And, you know, Michael Burson scored a pretty good recruit in Cameron Huss, who looks like he's going to be a really, really fine player. And then he's getting Jacob Beckman coming in, who also is a really has the earmarks for being a really, really strong player. You know, both Wisconsin and Marquette, to be fair, have missed out on a couple of the, you know, better players in the state in recent years. Obviously, Jordan Ebrugge is the one that comes to mind, jumps immediately to mind, who went to Oklahoma State, and Harrison Ott going to Vanderbilt. You know, Wisconsin, I think, has to recruit that type of player and has to get that type of player in its program. It's hard. It's hard because those guys who are the very cream of the crop, who are really blue chip recruits, they want to go someplace where they know they're going to improve. And those guys have, you know, aspirations to play pro golf. So they're going to go to programs that they think will prepare them for professional golf. Not that Wisconsin doesn't and can't, but I think, you know, that's all the ingredients when you have to look at this job and recruiting. It's hard to get the very, very best Wisconsin kids, but I think it's critical.
And you can throw Pearson Hunt, who's at Illinois, in that mix.
Right.
And as far as current kids that have left the state, but we also have seen, and since launching the website, we've, you know, written stories, we've posted results for guys, late bloomers like Matt Tolan at South Dakota, who won a state amateur, and you know, Hunter Eichhorn at Marquette isn't a Wisconsin kid, but played the WPGA Junior Tour. And, you know, again, was just named today as Big East Conference Player of the Year again. So I think you're right. As I look at the two eras that we're talking about here, Gary, well, the one with the Big Ten championships, that one year that was won by Ben Walter out of Menominee, Mark Scheibach out of Fond du Lac, Joe Ring out of Madison, Jim Pica out of the Hayward area, I believe Stone Lake to give the area credit, and Jason Fitchett out of Green Bay. And that was also, I know Kirk Wieland out of Lodi was also in the mix during that era. And then you look further ahead, the year that Dan Woltman won an NCAA regional. And of course, Woltman now a multi-time state open champion, currently with Korn Ferry Tour status. And it was Woltman, Pat Duffy, I believe out of the Appleton area, Jeff Kaiser out of Onalaska, Tyler Obermuller out of River Falls, and Garrett Jones, who is still a volunteer assistant out of the metropolis in southwestern Wisconsin called Rui, just outside of Platteville in the Iowa Grant School District. And they made it all the way to regionals after a fifth place finish at the Big Tens. And then Woltman made it on to the NCAA championship for the first of two visits there with the Badgers after transferring from Kentucky, which brings us to names, Gary. Your thoughts on the vibe I'm getting, I talked about a half dozen former Badgers of different eras here, recent eras. And, you know, a couple names came to mind, but in general, before we get to the names, to a person, they believe that the next head coach of the University of Wisconsin is a former player that has credentials to do the job and do the job well. Your thoughts on that?
Are these guys saying a former player at Wisconsin or just a former player somewhere?
They believe, most of them say, a former player at Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And as we get into the names, we can talk about, you know, the ups and downs, the pros and cons to another out, you know, someone from outside the program coming in. Let's not forget, you know, Jim Schumann went to college at Florida, but then spent, you know, decades, you know, in Wisconsin as a competitive tour player on the Nike Tour, and then as a teaching professional. And Dennis Tiziani, you know, had a PGA Tour career. And, you know, so technically, you know, I don't know how you would characterize them, but, you know, I think they see themselves now as Badgers through and through. And, this group is saying that they think that there's people out there in the, in the alumni ranks of players that could do a fine job.
No doubt. I'm certain there are. And I do believe it helps to know the culture. It helps know the background of the university. It helps know the high school coaches in the state. I think some coming from outside the program or another part of the country, there'd be a pretty steep learning curve. Not to say that person couldn't do it. Of course, they could. But I think, you know, a former player from Wisconsin or even Marquette, you know, one of the state schools that really knows the territory and knows the culture and knows golf in the state, I think would have a leg up on someone from outside the state.
So let's start first with outside the program, Gary. Two names that come to mind with, well, actually three names with Marquette ties. One would be the head coach now, Steve Bailey. One would be his former assistant coach, Trey Carpenter, and another former assistant coach who still is in the state, Michael Bilowski. Out of those three guys, Gary, do you see any going after this Badger job?
Oh, boy. You know, Mike Bilowski, I've gotten to know him pretty well in recent years in his role as the development director at the MAC Fund. He's got a good job, but that's a job, Rob, we talked about before the podcast. There's a lot of pressure on Michael to raise money. That's a fundraising job, and you always have to raise more than you did last year, the year before. And he loves golf, obviously, and is still a fine player. He has this sort of gregarious personality that I think would go over well with recruits and with parents of recruits. I think he'd be good, but is he interested? I don't know. I don't know what his salary is. I have no idea. And I don't know what would be offered to the incoming coach, but that's a consideration too. When we talk about guys who might be interested in this job, would they be taking a salary cut?
And as we looked at it, and Gary and I have been talking about this all week, again, this is an important hire for the University of Wisconsin because it impacts golf, you know, throughout the state. Some databases showed that Mike Burson was getting paid in the range of $80,000 as of 2017. But in the last 12 months, the staff has taken one, if not two, you know, modest pay cuts to help offset the losses caused by COVID-19. So that's a very good point about the salary. I like Michael Bilowski. I love his personality. Reminds me a lot of a young Tiz, and he can get along with everybody. I mean, yep. He's the kind of guy when you see his name pop up on your pairing sheet for a state amateur or a state open, you know you're going to have a good time and see some good golf because the guy can still play. He won the match play a couple years ago. So he's a good one. Trey Carpenter, since leaving Marquette, spent a year at Stanford as an assistant coach. He currently has Denver University in the postseason. He kind of, you know, was in that era when both Steve and his assistants were really doing a good job of finding those diamonds in the rough locally, mixing them with guys from around the country and around the world, and creating the culture that we see today. Before we get to the former Badgers that we would consider, a couple of maybe what we would call outliers here that have come to the fore in my conversations with people about this position. One was Travis Becker, the very popular teaching pro down at the Beloit Club and Ironworks Golf Lab in downtown Beloit. If you've read my junior golf stories over the last year, you see Travis's name pop up a lot. A lot of the kids who have, you know, maybe started with one instructor are now going to Travis, seeking him out to be able to take their game to a new level. And Travis, who spent a number of years under Dennis and Larry Tiziani at Cherokee Country Club, has really flourished down in Beloit, and from a player development standpoint and a knowledge of the junior golfers in the state, he'd be great. And then the other one that is kind of, you know, doesn't fit that Badger Marquette profile is Lee Reinke, the coach at UW Green Bay, who's done a wonderful job, you know, trying to build some name recognition for those two programs. He coaches both the men and the women. He made a major breakthrough this year with the women in all Wisconsin lineup. In fact, his entire roster, the entire time he's been there, has been all Wisconsin. He certainly fits that profile, Gary, of finding diamonds in the rough and getting them to play at the Division I level. His men's team this year didn't quite get to where he wanted it to, but you know he's coached George Kneiser out of Oconomowoc, and now Max Pascher, you know, won a tournament this year and was, I believe, an All Horizon League finisher in 2021. Out of Mequon Homestead. So he's been able to pull kids, and Ben Gillis was the other player on that team this year. So he's recruited Madison, he's recruited Milwaukee, he's recruited, you know, his backyard. You can't discount what Lee's done up there. It might be a big jump, and there's also the age factor. There's another guy that was mentioned at one point this week because he, I think, apparently threw his hat in the ring last time, and that was Jim Gauger. Jim and Lee, you know, kind of in that same era, my age, you know, how much longer do you want to do this kind of thing? And much like Michael Burson, when you've got, you know, a family to attend to. But, you know, I don't think you can discount the fact that Lee has to be considered.
No, I think, you know, the guys you just mentioned obviously check a lot of boxes, and Lee's familiar with the UW system. Travis Becker, I think, would be a really good choice. The question I have with Travis is, you know, he's got a great thing going at the Beloit Club and Ironworks Golf Lab down in Beloit. He's got a lot of students. I'm sure he's making, you know, pretty good money. And I think in his case, I'm guessing it would be a pay cut and maybe a substantial one. I have no idea what he makes, but he has a lot of students and gives an awful lot of lessons. So I'm guessing it would be a pay cut for him. But he, you know, if he's interested in the job, that probably wouldn't be a hindrance. So yeah, I think all those names you mentioned are, you know, all have pluses and would bring certain things to the table.
Yeah, of course, the Beloit Club is part of the Empire, owned and managed by Diane Hendricks, right, who's a successful business person in southern Wisconsin. And when I mentioned Travis's name to one of the people I talked to this week, they thought for sure that UW would have a hard time matching that salary. And if they did, that she would gladly engage to keep Travis in Beloit. So yeah, that one might be a hard sell, but you know, worth talking about. And of course, then, you know, you're talking about the top teaching professionals in the state, and we have two of them that proudly wear the Badger colors, and that's David Roche out of Milwaukee and Ryan Helmanen out of the Appleton area. And, you know, they top a list of former Badgers that were mentioned, including Mario Tiziani, and then one that really seems to be the one that has some, maybe the most traction, and that's Dan Woltman, who we talked about earlier as being a guy who had great success at the college level, has had very solid success out on the various tours, hasn't gotten where he wants to go to the PGA Tour, but has been, you know, very competitive on the Corn Ferry Tour, and has won now 4 Wisconsin State Open Championships. The guy knows how to play. And then, Gary, I mentioned it to you earlier this week that in all my discussions when he's come out here to California, whether it be for that second stage of Corn Ferry Tour qualifying or the Monday qualifiers in the spring, he's always coming from University Ridge. He now lives in Sun Prairie, and as a former player, he's able to use the indoor facilities at U Ridge to stay sharp through the winter. He's there all the time. He's witnessed what has unfolded over the last 4 or 5 years that he's been out there under Michael Burson. And, you know, he talks to the guys at U Ridge. He talks to he's talked to the coaching staff there. He's talked to the players there. They know him. He knows them. That's a name that surfaced in the last couple of days. And it appears he's interested. If he's interested, is he the guy out of all those that checks the most boxes? Or how do we balance Roche, Helmanen, if Mario Tiziani were to show an interest, and Dan Woltman as being potential candidates?
Yeah, Dan does check all the boxes. He's been a very hard worker too, and he would hold his players, I think, accountable. We talked about this. Not that the other guys wouldn't, but he would make sure that they're practicing the right way. I think the question with Dan is he has to decide whether he's done playing. You know, because you take the coaching job, obviously you're done trying to make it on the Corn Ferry Tour and get to the PGA Tour. I'm sure that's something that he's probably going to struggle with a little bit, because he's been such a fine player and he's come close to breaking through. So he has to decide, you know, his decision, if he really wants to throw his hat in the ring, is he done playing? The other guys you mentioned, you know, David Roche, sort of in the Travis Becker mold, you know, has worked with a lot of good young players, you know, Harrison Ott's coach. Mm-hmm. And again, I think David probably makes pretty good money as a teaching professional with all the students he has. You know, he's awfully busy. So, you know, a guy like that would have to decide if he wants to give up the teaching end of it. He would still be teaching, obviously, in a different way. And then there's the administrative side of things and, and the headache of being away from home. David has young children. As Michael Burson said, he's away from home 130 days a year. So that's another thing that these guys have to think about too, is whether they're willing to be on the road that much if they have families.
And to that point on Dan Woltman, his wife expecting their first child any day now, and he has lost, you know, both he and Jordan Niebrugge got lost in the reshuffle late in the Corn Ferry Tour season last year, and You know, Dan hasn't really played much at all out on tour this year as he awaits for, you know, a huge event in his life. But it sounds as though he's interested. And it's kind of weird because you've got Dan Woltman, who's got tremendous playing experience, understands the swing because he's worked under many different mentors who have taught him things that he hasn't had the time to teach to others, that unlike Roche and Helminen, who have, as you mentioned, stables of kids. So now you've got people who are very well versed in the swing versus a guy who, you know, knows how to play. And I think that knowing how to play part is a very important component to guiding, you know, back to what Michael Burson has done quite well. And he's got guys that are, you know, Sam Anderson gained status on the Canadian tour for this summer as an amateur in the spring qualifiers. And Jordan Hahn just made his PGA Tour debut last week after surviving a Monday qualifier, and he's got conditional Corn Ferry status. That's a big part of what high school kids look at when they're looking to play at the next level.
That is a big part, Rob. And you know, and you're absolutely right. Knowing the swing and knowing technically what a good swing does and what it is and why it is part of playing golf and scoring, but it's not all of playing golf and scoring. There's a lot of other things that go into that. But Roche, and to be fair, you know, David Roche and Ryan Helminen have been great players too. So they know how to play too, and they know how to score. So, you know, all those guys check a lot of boxes, and it's going to be fascinating to see how many of them actually go after this job and who winds up getting it. And it could be someone, Rob, we haven't even mentioned.
Well, and especially because it's interesting the timing of this, because it's occurring as a change in the athletic directorship at the University of Wisconsin with Barry Alvarez departing. And my guess is they will be hiring a golf coach before they finally, offer the athletic director's job to somebody. And so therefore it's going to be, in theory, people under Barry now who will be making this hire. And currently the senior associate AD who's overseeing golf is Maria Pienka. I hope I pronounced that right, but Maria is a former Badger tennis player, the former Maria Neubauer. And she's done a great job of overseeing the programs, you know, providing resources and guidance to the teams, and has in turn developed a very strong passion for the game of golf, I'm told. And Maria, I think, will handle this search the right way. And I think she understands, she hears, I would hope, the concerns of, you know, the past alums who have, who grew up winning Big Ten titles and going to NCAA regionals with other kids from Wisconsin, and finding it curious that mold would be broken, especially when, you know, and again, it's a results oriented business. What Michael did wasn't wrong. It was what everybody else in the game of golf, college golf, is doing: offering early, combing the country, trying to evaluate talent. The talent was there, had great potential. We've seen some of these guys that have done great things. Griffin Barella, with still eligibility left, I believe, has played really well in the Colorado Open against really good fields over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years while he's been at UW. So these are good players that just don't seem to perform well at the time of the Big Ten tournament, as evidenced by the 14th place finishes. So it'll be interesting to see, with Maria probably leading the search, which direction they go. I need to throw out one other name that I did reach out to because he has been decorated as an instructor, as a club fitter. That's Jeff Kaiser, a former Badger golfer currently in the TaylorMade development and club fitting program out on the west side now of Madison at Nevada Bob's. They just renovated out there, and he's got a second floor studio. And he and his wife, the former Heidi Hinners, a former Badger golfer, they are expecting twins in the fall. So the timing not right, but he did say, and this is important, Gary, because all these names we mentioned, especially those with Badger ties, who have been so outspoken about the way the direction of the program, he would be very interested in working with whatever coach takes over the position as far as networking with, you know, these instructors and helping develop the kids that the next coach will recruit, and, you know, in his way, in his studio, and with his teachings, because he's got a stable of players that go to him as well. And you would think that between Roche and Milwaukee, Kaiser and Madison, Helminen and Appleton, that you would be able to find, two, three kids every recruiting cycle that would come in the way that, you know, Dennis Tiziani and Jim Schumann were able to recruit and at least, you know, begin the process of building your presence in the Big Ten, and then maybe at some point getting back to a regional.
How persuasive are the alums going to be, Rob? How impactful is their voice going to be? Is Maria going to listen to them? Are they going to organize and, you know, present an organized front, or are they just going to call her independently and just make suggestions? Well, have you gotten a sense for how involved the alumni are going to be in this search?
I know one is at least one has reached out and pushed the name of Dan Woltman to Maria. So there's a knowledge of, you know, some know Maria, you know, directly, and others, you know of her and may have actually played golf at Wisconsin while she was on campus playing tennis. And I would hope, and especially if they're listening to this podcast, and I know we have a good loyal audience of listeners that are familiar with Maria, I would encourage her to reach out to them and them to reach out to her. Because I've been covering a lot of different college sports for a very long time. I've never heard an alumni base as opinionated about what's going on as I have the Badger men's golf alumni about this program. It shows passion, it shows concern, it shows that no matter what direction they go, they want to help, but that person who is hired has to want to have the help of those people. And yeah. I think one of my favorite stories to tell is when I was covering the Wisconsin State Amateur a couple of years ago at North Shore in Menasha, and two of the guys that were in the final groups the final day, one was Sam Galloway out of Nina, went to Emory University in the South, and then Emmett Herb, who was at St. Thomas, Minnesota, just turned professional, someone asked me that was there at the tournament, not playing, just watching, and someone who clearly supported the Badgers goes, did the Badgers recruit any of these guys? Well, no, and you have to understand, you know, Sam Galloway came on late in his high school career. Emmett Herb has always been a little bit small for, you know, his age and in comparison to guys around him, but he beats them all. And it just, you know, by that point, as late bloomers, you would call them, you know, Michael Burson had already, you know, recruited their class and brought in guys. It was probably, you know, not far before the Jordan Hahn era. And, you know, you can't argue with some of the guys that he brought in. It's a very delicate situation because, as we know, with all the other sports that the mainstream college sports fans pay attention to, basketball, football, the Badger basketball team is a great example. The class that's leaving now, you know, did not perform to the level that their fan base thought it would, but they're very hopeful that the next two classes do. And again, that's the beauty of college sports. You have 4 years now, five or six with COVID extra eligibility to get the most out of them. But you can't have many misses. No. And especially with, you know, I think Michael never had more than 10 guys on the roster. College coaches tell me 8 to 10 is a very comfortable number because you can't keep 10 people happy when you're only playing five for very long. And then you have the qualifying process and then someone else gets disgruntled. You're trying to keep a positive attitude, very difficult in golf. So again, I don't argue. I really appreciated Mike's friendship and his honesty. You know, I called him out on the lack of a walk-on program, a tryout program for some of these guys who are sitting on campus right now, Gary, who have done great things in junior golf in Wisconsin and are either competing for the club program, playing in some amateur events in the summer. What is it? The guy off the track team, Zach Dibdal out of Big Bend, you know, who was a high jumper who, you know, can shoot 65 every now and then. You know, I mean, again, there's a big difference between, you know, that kind of golfer and what you need to have sustained success. But you get the idea. There's talent out there. And I think the alumni base at the UW feels that the talent in Wisconsin can certainly take the program in a better direction based on Big Ten finish.
Yeah, whoever the new coach is, when he comes in, he or she, whoever the new coach is, should, I guess it would be very important for them, that person, to have sort of a summit meeting to call these alumni who are so passionate about the program and who a lot of them have played in the program and get them together and just bounce ideas off them and hear what these players have to say who've gone through the program and have had success. It sounds like Rob, like they're very involved and very passionate and want to see obviously the best thing for the program. So I would think one of the first things a new coach should do is to meet with them and to find out what they think will make the program, you know, take the program to the next level.
And to close out the discussion, Gary, I should also mention that, you know, if you follow the Badger programs closely, you know that Michael Burson did a lot of outreach to the alumni, especially late in his tenure here. They had some of their, you know, every sport has kind of a reunion event, you know, associated with home football games. And Michael did that. I don't know, you know, how that was received, how that went, but I think it's important to note that the effort was made and it didn't connect. And you know, now we're in the situation we're in where there's an opportunity for those who thought that maybe there's a different direction the program could go to make that known. And let's hope it is. And let's hope we see it reflected in who leads the program going forward. But clearly, Gary, you gained the interest of our readers with the story that Michael was stepping down. And it sounds as though it was pretty sudden. And because it sounds like a lot of his players were caught off a little bit by surprise by that this happened right now.
Yeah, talk to Sam Anderson, and he said that the players were shocked. They were stunned. They had no idea this was coming. Michael told me he kind of knew back around January that he was going to be stepping down, but he, you know, he kept it to himself. He didn't hint at it or tell anybody that he was coming to the end. And so all the players, you know, he called them up and wanted to call a team meeting. It didn't wind up being a team meeting because guys have finals and they couldn't all get together at the same time. But the players, you know, just thought, well, we're going to have a team meeting and talk about the season and what went right and what went wrong and plan for next year. And, you know, lo and behold, the reason for the team meeting was for the coach to tell his players he was stepping down. So, yeah, a lot of surprises, surprised people. And Sam said all the guys loved playing for him. So.
And we should mention Michael is going to be moving back to, you know, kind of his roots in Charleston, South Carolina. He's formed a company, Underpar Consulting. In his new position, he will mentor high school golfers that hope to earn college scholarships and then college players who want to play professionally. And it's kind of neat. We've seen a lot of people give back that way, use their experience to try to, you know, help the next generation get to where they want to go. So that's very good. And last but not least, Gary, as you know, Wisconsin.golf has sponsored the Dairyland Duel. And I know that all the alumni that I spoke with thanked Michael for having the foresight and the good relationship with Steve Bailey at Marquette to be able to get that off the ground. And a lot of that started, you know, grew out of the, what they called the Bilowski bachelor party. When Michael Bilowski got married, they had a largely Marquette reunion, but I believe Garrett Jones was invited. And that kind of forged a relationship as well between former players from the two schools. And let's face it, the alumni base there continue to play and play well in state amateur and state open events. And that's been a wonderful thing that the two coaching staffs have really pushed and gotten off the ground. And we're glad to sponsor that. But, you know, again, a healthy relationship between the three Division I universities sets the table for everything else that goes on among the college golfers in the state and the amateur golfers in terms of the summer schedule.
Yeah, the Dairyland Duel was a great idea, and it could only happen. I mean, you don't see that too often between competing programs in the same state, but, you know, Steve Bailey and Michael Burson have had a long relationship. They're close. They're good buddies. And I covered that, the inaugural Dairyland Duel last year, Rob, and those guys just had a blast. They had so much fun. So that's a good event, and I hope it continues. You know, with Michael leaving, I'm sure it will, but I hope that event has a long future.
Absolutely. So that's what's up, a very long what's up here on Talking.Golf.
Yeah.
What's up, powered by our Instagram account at wis.golf. And you can go to Instagram, look at wis.golf for a lot of fun things as we continue to cover the game of golf in Wisconsin. New segment debuting this week in conjunction with our new sponsor, of course, Talking.Golf, sponsored by the American Family Insurance Championship in Madison. Wisconsin stop on the PGA Tour Champions is back on the 2021 schedule. Mark your calendars, June 11th through the 13th. Steve Stricker will be there. Jerry Kelly will be there. And the Madison golfers will be joined by many of their friends on the over 50 circuit as the event has raised more than $10.2 million for local charities since its debut in 2016. Limited number of tickets go on sale May 11th as the tournament begins to bridge from their absence last year to back to normal, hopefully next year, with limited galleries. You can find out more at amfamchampionship.com. But as we look at the region's tradition leaderboard again, we have Jerry Kelly and Steve Stricker now currently tied at in fourth place at 6 under par. And they are two shots behind Stephen Ames, but it's a marathon, not a sprint this week on the Champions Tour. That's a major. It means four rounds instead of three. So still plenty of time for Jerry and Steve to right the ship. You can't have two better guys to build a local PGA Tour Champions event around these days, Gary D'Amato, than Steve Stricker and Jerry Kelly, do you?
You know, there's so much fun. Yeah, Jerry's got that personality, just draws people to him. And Steve, of course, has they both have bona fides as players, but obviously Steve as a Ryder Cup captain and as the host of the tournament. Yeah, you know, Rob, from being around them, that they're both great guys and great to be around. And the AmFam Championship's lucky to have, you know, Steve as an ambassador and Jerry as a champion.
And of course, a lot of great names on this tour. The one that's really jumped out here in the last few weeks, Alex Cheka. And if you follow the career of Alex Cheka, he's spent the better part of the last decade chasing Monday qualifiers. Our friend Neil Johnson, the former River Falls golfer and former WSJ Player of the Year, who's now helping out with the Monday Q Info Twitter coverage of Monday qualifiers, will tell you, I mean, this guy has been basically somewhat penniless in chasing the tour without status, and now almost won an event a couple weeks ago, and he's sitting here T2, one shot behind Stephen Ames going into the weekend. You get guys like Alex Cheka, Gary D'Amato, and then you get the Ernie Els and the Bernhard Langers and the Darren Clarks, the guys who really, you know, made names for themselves both here in the States and abroad. It is everything I think it was envisioned to be when the Champions Tour started out.
You know, you mentioned Darren Clark's name. I mean, the guy had a heck of a Masters. I mean, he led for a while, and now he's in contention of champion. Maybe he's making a run at the Ryder Cup team, Rob. Maybe he wants to be a captain's pick at age 51 or whatever he is.
and I tell you, and some of these guys, and I know that it was Steve Stricker talked about in the pre-tournament interviews for the region's tradition as the defending champion, but you know, you look at a guy like Robert Karlsson out of Sweden, you look at Langer, you look at what, you know, Gary Player has done for so long in terms of promoting physical fitness. Clearly, Mike Weir is another one, a Canadian who won the last event out here on the tour. And, you know, these guys are in the same shape they were back on the PGA Tour. And it kind of motivates the rest of us to kind of, you know, maybe not order the large order of fries at Culver's and go down to a medium.
Rob, it's funny when you look at the guys on the Champions Tour when it was known as the Senior Tour, you know, 20 odd years ago, you know, there were some big guys playing on that tour. Let's put it that way. Now you still see the occasional guy who has packed on some weight, but there's a lot of guys in really, really good shape. And I mean, you look at Steve and Jerry, I mean, they look like their bodies look like they look, you know, 15, 20 years ago. Steve's still a flat belly. So yeah, these guys have taken care of themselves, and they took care of themselves on the PGA Tour and carried over to the Champions Tour. And that's why some of them still play so well.
And as we segue in from the AmFam report, which will be a weekly weekly feature here on Talking.Golf, into the Ryder Cup report, I wanted to freeze time yesterday, Gary D'Amato. Phil Mickelson, who could play at University Ridge because he's old enough this June, shoots a 64 at the event this week, the Wells Fargo Championship, and is currently and was in the lead after day one. First time he's led in over 900 days on the PGA Tour. And I don't want to say what he shot today. He's still in the top 10. I'll put it that way. It wasn't a stellar follow-up, especially going from an afternoon tee time to a morning tee time. But Phil Mickelson in the conversation, Gary D'Amato, and I want him to be in the conversation for the Ryder Cup.
You know, it's interesting, Rob. I know you followed what's going on with the Super Golf League. I guess it was formerly known as Premier Golf League, that is dangling all this money in front of some of these guys, you know, Dustin Johnson, Patrick Reed, Bryson DeChambeau, and Mickelson supposedly would get the most money of all of them. You know, I've read 50 million. I've read 100 million to join this league. And Phil has not dismissed it. And Commissioner of the PGA Tour, Jay Monahan, met with the players this week at down at Quail Hollow and told them in uncertain terms, look, if you want to play on this tour, you are excommunicated from the PGA Tour. So if Mickelson makes a money grab here, because let's face it, he's won his majors. He's accomplished what he probably almost everything he set out to accomplish. You know, he can't play in the Ryder Cup if he grabs that money. So that's going to be very interesting to see what happens with these guys going forward.
I saw Ricky Fowler also has not, poo-pooed the idea. You know, Gary, help me out. Is this a team competition as much as it is an individual? How will this be formatted?
Yeah, it is a team competition around 16 guys in teams of four, the way I understand. And the one negative Mickelson pointed out was that they have to play in all the tournaments. They can't take weeks off or tournaments off. And Phil said it's going to be hard to tell guys who have, you know, managed their own schedule and been independent contractors their whole professional careers, you've got to be here, you've got to be here, you've got to play here, here, and here. On the other hand, if you're going to dangle 20 or 30 million in front of them, you know, that might be that's a pretty good selling point. So, you know, some of the players, Rory McIlroy and Justin Thomas both have said, look, we're chasing history. We're chasing majors. We want our legacy to be major championships, not a money grab. So some guys, you know, have written it off, but other guys are interested. So I know the PGA Tour is very, very concerned about the Super Golf League.
Well, I'm a big fan of team golf at the high school and college level. I think I'd have to be sold on it at the professional level, but you know, there are a lot of pitfalls when you start franchising, you know, guys onto teams versus being the independent contractors they've been since essentially the beginning of time as it relates to the PGA Tour. So we'll continue to follow that one. Meanwhile, we'll continue to follow the leaderboard here at the Wells Fargo. Currently, a three-way tie at the top: Matt Wallace, Gary Woodland, and Patrick Rogers. Two guys, Gary and Matt Wallace and Gary Woodland, who could be at Whistling Straits, should be at Whistling Straits this September. Matt Wallace out of England, of course, the American, the former U.S. Open champion, Gary Woodland. But you and Patrick Rogers go back a ways, don't you? P-Rod. What do you know about P-Rod?
Yeah, I saw P-Rod as a young man at Blue Mound win the Western Junior. And I remember Wyndham Clark was in that field. There were some really, really good players in that field. Well, there always are at the Western Junior. But yeah, but I remember talking to Patrick. He was very excited before going off to college. And here he is X years later with a full beard and in contention in the tournament. It's good to see.
Good to see P-Rod doing well. I could really take this podcast off the rails, Gary, if we start talking A-Rod. So I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, I'm going to go.
And I'm going to go to What's Next. What's Next, powered by @wis.golf live on Twitter. That's our results Twitter account. Every result that appears on Wisconsin.golf funnels through the @wis.golf live. You can share it with your friends and you can go there as the results are posted to see who's doing what at the high school, college, amateur, and professional levels. And Gary, our What's Next segment leads off with high school golf. Tomorrow there's a whopping invitational at Erin Hills, former U.S. Open site. A great event, the Mac Fund Invitational. You're going to be out there. It's a great event because, A, they're raising money for a great cause. We mentioned Mike Bilowski and the Mac Fund. They are the beneficiaries of a lot of fundraising by the teams competing in this. And then at least in past years, and I think it's still going to be the case, the top fundraising team wins an opportunity to come back over the summer and play 18 holes of golf at Erin Hills with Mark Wilson, who's been behind this from the get-go. You can't get any better on any level than playing Erin Hills in a great mid-season tournament as we start to approach the postseason for boys golf and then raise money for a great cause.
Well, there aren't too many high school events that I've ever heard of, Rob, that actually raise money for charity and have done it for many years as the Mac Fund Invitational has done. And it's a great field. You sent me some of the field list, and it's maybe second only to the state tournament as far as strength of field. So a lot of good teams going to be there, a lot of good players, and they're going to be raising money for a great cause. So a lot of win-win-wins going on here, Rob.
Seven of the top eight teams in this week's Division I coaches poll led by a couple of Milwaukee area schools, Kettle Moraine and Mequon Homestead, that are off to great starts. And then two of the top three teams in Division II, Madison, Edgewood, and Xavier. But you're looking at Arrowhead, Marquette, Wauwatosa East West, Wanakee. Speaking of Wanakee, and you mentioned there aren't many, you know, tournaments that raise money for causes, but Wanakee knows how to do it. Their head coach, Betsy Zadra, longtime assistant coach at Madison Edgewood, helped form the Crusade for a Cure, a very popular girls golf tournament at Maple Bluff that raised money for the Carbone Cancer Center down at the UW and other cancer related causes. Betsy this week and getting her boys team at Wanakee ready for the MacFun Invitational. They're selling their old Wanakee golf bags. And of course, if you know Wanakee, you know it's the only Wanakee in the world, Gary D'Amato. So this means these are the only Wanakee golf bags in the world. And $30 a pop. I'm not sure how many there are. There's multiple golf bags. And I'm guessing maybe different styles from different years. You know, they either, you know, most programs, you either make the kids buy the bag or you check them out and check them in every year. So for $30 each, you can help add to the Wanakee contribution to the MacFun Invitational. And if you search Wanakee Boys Golf or Wanakee Golf on Twitter, you'll find out more information. But that's fun. I like that. And you know me and golf bags, Gary. If I were there right now, I'd be having a Wanakee golf bag in the garage.
I might have to pick one up, Rob, just so when I can go to the course, people say, hey, look at that guy in the Wanakee golf team. He's bald and he's got a great beard.
That's right.
So, no, I don't think anyone's going to confuse me for high school.
I don't have to worry about that. Gary, especially as young as the kids look these days playing high school golf, I got to say, right. You right. And I do look like we're something out of a dinosaur movie. You talked about dinosaurs before. You now you're spot on.
Also you're
coming
right.
up next week, we've got WIAA Girls Golf Sectionals. The alternate season is in swing. They had a regional competition this week, and sectionals will be this coming Monday and Tuesday, I believe it is, at Brown County Golf Course for the Bayport Sectional. Middleton Sectional will be at Pleasant View Golf Course. And Bayport Pirates, the Middleton Cardinals, really the two teams to beat, but there was a lot of great golf played. I'm currently in the process of doing my world famous WIA regional report card, and you can look for that later on today and take a look at what happened at the regional level. Gary, we should also mention college golf. We've got three guys with local ties in the NCAA Division I championship, and that includes Brookfield's Harrison Ott, his Vanderbilt Commodores to play host to a Division I regional. That field will include Hunter Eichhorn out of Marquette, as I mentioned earlier, named today as the Big East Conference Player of the Year. And then Clayton Tribu, who had a wonderful performance in the Atlantic 10 Conference Championship, helping Davidson University to the title. He was assigned in his Davidson University men's golf team to the Tallahassee Regional, hosted by Florida State down at the Seminole Legacy Golf Club. And those are the three there. And then, of course, a whole bunch of teams playing next week at the NCAA Division III Women's Championship. We talked a lot last week about the UW-Whitewater Women's Program. They did come through and win the WIAC. And behind Kristen Bowe out of Franklin, she was the medalist. But a great story out of the Northern Athletic Collegiate Conference, Lakeland University. I always thought it was in Sheboygan. It's currently has a mailing address in Plymouth, but over there in the golfing metropolis that is Sheboygan, Lakeland wins the NAC, coming from 25 shots down the final day to win in a playoff over Marion University of Fond du Lac. Gary, I don't care what the scores were. Anytime you rally from 25 down and go to a playoff in team golf, there's a little excitement going there.
Yeah, Rob, I would advise anyone listening to this podcast to go and read your story. That was really well done. I was drawn into that. Yeah, such a great, such a huge comeback, obviously. It's like coming from 20 points down in the fourth quarter to win a basketball game.
Madison Bowers of Mineral Point, she plays at Dubuque, the University of Dubuque in Iowa. They won the American Rivers Conference Championship. She'll be in the NCAA Division III's over at East Lansing, Michigan, Forest Acres Golf Course. Aubrey Torhorst of Waterford competing for Grinnell College. And Maggie Warner of Lakewood, Wisconsin, Wabino Leona High School. She played on the boys golf team up there, number one all 4 years on her team. She's at Illinois Wesleyan. They knocked off Carthage to win the CCIW. And Sydney Brown had herself a tournament up there in the Minnesota Intercollegiate Athletic Conference. And she will be going to nationals with her St. Catharines team out of Minnesota. And we also have the UW Superior men in the men's NCAA Division IIIs. UW Eau Claire didn't quite play well enough this spring to earn an at-large. St. Thomas did out of Minnesota, but Matthew Robb out of Heartland, who had been on the top five most of the spring, not in the lineup for the MEAC final. So we'll see who they bring to nationals. But you know, the college season's winding down. We're talking NCAAs and coaching changes, Gary D'Amato.
My head is spinning, Rob, from all the names you just mentioned in schools, in Division III especially. And I know you're going to be all over that, Rob. You're going to be a busy guy in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, between the high schools wrapping up and then college deal next week. And then, you know, we mentioned that the Badger men's coaching job opened. There's also been two really good jobs posted in the WIAC. UW-Platteville, which played the conference championship under interim coach Jeff Bustina, one of the best girls basketball coaches in the history of the state at Cuba City. He's now an assistant women's basketball coach at Platteville, stepped in and helped out at Platteville, but they're taking applicants for their job. UW Oshkosh, which had on paper an interim coach for this year, has posted the job. We'll see if, you know, how that all shakes out. But Division III golf, as evidenced by Lakeland and their improbable run, and Whitewater and their probable run, they're moving the needle at the national level. And I scoured NCAA regionals this week, Division II men and women, and I didn't find a single Wisconsin golfer. And there's a good two dozen women playing, and probably a good half dozen to a dozen men playing Division II golf around the country. And nothing, Gary. Skunked, shut out, nada. I think it speaks to the power of the opportunity available at these Division III schools in Wisconsin. They're well run. They've got a history to them. And, you know, there is no regional even to go through. And if you win your conference, you're going right to the national championship. I tell you, those having been to the NCAA Division IIIs with my daughter, I mean, they treat you as well at that level, you know, at their venues. And these cities bid on these championships. And they're going to have, the gals are going to have a whale of a time over there in East Lansing at the Forest Acres Golf Course, Michigan State hosting. And then I think the men are down, I want to say Kansas this year. And a couple years ago, they were at a PGA Tour venue where they have the Barbasol in Kentucky. It's amazing. There are no bad golf courses when you're hosting a national championship, are there, Gary?
I don't think so, Rob. Yeah, they're all great. And what a great memory for these young men and women who have largely paid their own way to college and get to go to a national championship and play for their school. A lot of the seniors, it's what they'll take with them the rest of their lives.
And of course, to close out what's next, to close out the podcast, Gary, between now and our next podcast, you will be at Hidden Glen Golf Club in Cedarburg, U.S. Open local qualifying. That's Wednesday. We kind of teased the field last week, but some of those Badgers who are going to be playing for a new coach will be in the field. I see Griffin Barala's name is in there. A who's who of Hunter Eichhorn, pros, amateurs, you name it. A lot of mini tour guys in there. Ryan Hellman in the field. Is David Roche? No David Roche, but Mick Smith, who just had the great National Club Pro Championship. And basically anybody who's anybody, Gary, you talk about your head spinning now, my friend. It'll be spinning next Wednesday at Hidden Glen.
It is really a strong field, Rob. I believe there's 80 players playing for five spots in sectionals. And it's, as you said, it's a very, very strong field with mini tour guys, with college players, with players coming back to the state who have been out of state for a while. Should be a lot of fun. And someone's going to have to go low to advance to sectional.
Well, we're going to let Gary D'Amato ice his brain in advance of the MAC Fund invite on Saturday and the U.S. Open local qualifier next Wednesday. We hope to be joined by you again next week, Gary, on Talking.Golf.
I think I'll make it, Rob. Looking forward to it.
Outstanding. Talking.Golf, sponsored by the American Family Insurance Championship in Madison. Wisconsin's stop on the PGA Tour Champions is back on the 2021 schedule. The tournament will be played June 11th through 13th at University Ridge Golf Course with a star-studded field featuring tournament host Steve Stricker and defending champion Jerry Kelly, both those guys from Madison, Wisconsin. This great event has raised more than $10.2 million for local charities since its debut in 2016. A limited number of tickets will go on sale starting May 11th. That would be Tuesday. You can check out the tournament's website, amfamchampionship.com, for more information. For Gary, I'm Rob. This has been Talking.Golf. We'll talk golf again next week.